Hotel.
India.
Echo.
Lima.
Delta.
Shield.
Looks like it's Muda Scale 26, back again, took a little week off, but...
That was your fault, by the way.
Oh, it was my fault. Oh.
I'll take the one for the team.
You'll
this
take
time.
The heat on that one?
Yeah, I'll take it.
But it's actually, you know, not too bad, because, extra week that we didn't really talk, kind of got together and talked on the weekend, and I think we actually had a pretty good conversation, so kind of want to bring up some of that stuff that we were talking about. And the first thing was one you wanted to bring up. Oh, before I get into that, better have my donuts over here. Bad News Ramen over there.
Very good. You're learning. So, get a couple Twitter followers and think you know the whole deal, huh?
And wrap someone on the beard around you. Get some respect. we talked for a little bit on the phone, and Bad News Ramen was mentioning he wanted to talk about Randy Orton a little bit. And I think it actually can work pretty well because, I mean, he's... He's really down on Orton. I mean, I think he is stale, but I still am a fan of Randy Orton.
You're still a fan of the guy.
I mean, I'm not like a rah-rah fan. He's not like my guy, but I still, you know, I think he has a lot to offer still. And I still
only if he turns heel, though.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, I think I was looking back at what we talked about last Muda Scale 25, and we didn't mention this our 25th Muda Scale, which I thought was, you know, pretty cool, but... We talked about why we like Biggie Langston. Well, I think this one, to me, is like, why do I not like Randy Orton?
Right.
And it's one thing to have all John Cena kayfabe, Achilles injuries aside, and having your...
Wait, you didn't see him limping down to the ring when he saved Daniel Bryan?
Yeah, he's heroic. Heroic. I can't even say heroic. How do you say that? Mr. Rourke?
Heroic.
Yeah, heroic. No, there we go. I can't say library either. Library.
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 You're a library guy?
Yeah, I'm a library guy.
You a Piscetti guy also?
No, I'm a spaghetti guy.
All right, good.
But it's just a case of I'm just too lazy to talk, so I don't feel like saying enunciating certain words. But you know, to try to stay away from a pretty standard Raw where Cena comes out, cuts a promo that you can fast forward. Ryback comes out and he snarls a little bit, and then lo and behold, let's end it with John Cena saving the day, like a la John Wayne, and having Ryback come out again. I was kind of thinking about Rhodes, and it really kind of dawned on me a little bit. Not Rhodes, I'm sorry, with Randy Orton, who was fighting Rhodes. And I just saw the whole thing where Rhodes, I was just thinking, like, how does it feel to be Rhodes right now? Rhodes,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, here he is, like, doing it like 2 weeks back, you know, facing Randy Orton. He's doing all the work, doing all the great spots, and then he's just waiting for the whole kind of, I call it the John Cena effect. You can even say like the Bret Hart experience, where they do little things here and there, and then they pull off, they have like their comeback. Randy Orton probably has the worst comeback of all time. It's just so old. And it kind of alludes to what you're saying. Like, you do like Randy Orton, and you think he has a lot to offer. I think he has a lot to offer, too. But I think he needs to go on the fly. And just the whole clothesline, duck the clothesline, do that fast power slam, which is a great move. That power slam is a great move. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of impartial, and I'm kind of prejudiced against I'm George Michaeling, the DDT that he does off the rope. It's a good move, but it's too staged. He finds certain ways to bring it in. He's been better about that, instead of the whole like Rey Mysterio thing of, okay, let's have Rey push a guy and oh he falls into the ropes. Now he can do the 619. And Orton was doing that for a while. Now there's kind of a little semblance of a guy getting hit, but he has to kind of roll out into the ring.
Well, the other thing that he actually did, he added the Exploder Suplex.
Geeking off of.
Well, I didn't geek off it, but like he added a move and it set it up better because when he throws them, they always ended up near the rope, so it was a little smoother transition. But go ahead.
Well, Bad News always finds a way to kind of allude back to John Cena and why John Cena sucks so much. But I wasn't really trying to do it this time. But I'm really thinking, it's like, okay, so Orton has his standard Orton match. And people, wrestlers through time, had a standard match. Hulk Hogan had a standard match. Mm-hmm. Ric Flair had a standard match. I don't know if Shawn Michaels did too much. Bret Hart had a standard match. And I really kind of look at back at Bret Hart matches, and I really kind of, you know, what it seems to me is that Bret Hart and Randy Orton really are similar. Now, Bret Hart is a way better in-ring technician than Randy Orton will ever be, and ever will be, ever was, ever will be. But it's kind of the same thing as, to me, Bret Hart matches don't stand the test of time. Because it's just really, unless you're really invested in the guy and you're cheering for the guy, it's just, the entertainment value really isn't there, because you're always going to have the five moves of doom. And Randy Orton has the five moves of doom that he has. And the five moves of doom is taken, of course, from Bret Hart. I can look online real fast and see what the five moves of doom are. But he had four or five moves that he did all the time. And then either a win or a pinfall would happen in some type of case. But the whole thing with Randy Orton is that, who is he following? Who is he getting modeled off of? And he's really getting modeled off of a John Cena match. And that's really kind of, when you have the standard bearer of your company, the number one guy, and he's going to have the same match over and over again. I really can't fault Randy Orton for doing what he does, because this is the formula to success of what to do. And you're looking at all these guys, and you look at over the past 2 weeks of the program, all these guys that can tell a different story in the ring all the time. Sandow took two losses to Orton, and even Daniel Bryan losing to Ryback. Yeah. And these guys are outperforming everybody, but they're still taking the loss. So it's just kind of I just wanted to bring it up. I don't know if there's any conclusion or whatever it is. I liked Randy Orton when you had two faces going against each other, Orton versus Cena, right before The Rock came back. When Orton had that really big push, it was a really organic push. And now it just seems like, what does this guy have to offer besides what he's doing right now?
Well, the thing that was good about the initial Randy Orton face push was that he didn't behave any differently than he did when he was a heel, and he was still getting the crowd reaction, right? So, I mean, he could still attack guys from behind, take them out in the back, get him after the bell, and people cheered it, and he didn't change his persona. He's now gotten to the point, and I think that's more the John Cena-ization or a Sheamus mold, where he's actually trying to become a nice guy, like, you know, worried about what other people think and stuff like that. I think that's why he worked as a tweener when he first turned face, because he didn't even change the way he acted. Now he's on a full-on babyface thing. Like, my defense of him is I know he wants to go heel, and I know in his heart he knows he's better off as a heel. And I think...
And this is taken from where?
Like, everything I've read over the last 2 years is that he kept saying he wanted to turn, and initially they said they wouldn't let him turn until they felt comfortable that Sheamus was established as the number one guy on SmackDown. And then I thought that was going to happen, and then I think the whole Ryback situation, like, kind of came out of nowhere, and I think CM Punk really took off as well. So I think those kind of, like, became a monkey wrench, because even still, you know, if he went heel, he wasn't going to be the number one heel the way CM Punk went. But I think that, you know, like, at times Orton has kind of had a reputation of being a dick in the locker room. I think he's kind of playing it his way, and, you know, I guess maybe I'm hoping against hope, but I think he has something when he turns heel, but he doesn't want to do any different stuff because he's in a situation that he doesn't even want to be in right now anyway.
Well, you kind of alluded to this the last podcast we did, where when you turn heel, all of a sudden everything magic happens. And the way I'm looking at this guy right now is that even if he turns heel, there really isn't anything about this guy that would make me want to watch him even more if he turned heel, because the stuff that he does right now, it can be seen as kind of heelish, but he has a baby face, and I think it brings up a bigger problem with this, the timing of him being a heel. I want to first say that right now, I don't think he has any personality to be heel. You look at when he was a heel, and the only thing he's done more, but the main thing that I remember with him as a heel was that whole debacle known as Triple H versus Randy Orton. I just didn't think that worked, and he was a heel, and Triple H was knocking on his door, and his wife answers like, "Hello, can I come in? I have a sledgehammer." You know, so it just... I don't see how him turning heel is going to change anything, because his persona has been the same this whole time, even when he was a tweener. I think even bringing up Ryback is supposed to be a heel now, but it's, to me, it's just, that's the problem within itself, because he's turning heel because John Cena needs somebody to beat up on. And the other thing that also I don't understand is that he was doing really well as a tweener, and then all that pretty much, not granted he had drug problems, you know, testing problems.
About Orton.
And so that kind of took away some of his steam. And when he came back in the locker room, all that momentum he had, he kind of lost because he didn't have Rhodes to back him up.
Yeah.
He didn't have the legacy to back him up. So now he's kind of standing on his own. And he didn't have John Cena to put him over. Mm-hmm. And we don't talk about John Cena putting people over, but Cena has put over Orton. He has put over CM Punk. And the whole tweener aspect is that I think wrestling fans, at least me as a wrestling fan, I like the tweeners, because then I get to decide, okay, do I like this guy? Do I not like this guy? I mean, that's why I like Sandow. That's why I like Rhodes. That's why I like CM Punk. That's why I like Ziggler. All these guys are tweeners, and it works, and I can make up my own mind. And right now, the WWE is such a big machine that either you're a heel or you're a babyface, and there's nothing in between. And it's like right now, to me, Raw is really at a crossroads. I mean, I watched this Raw, and I think we can jump into this, but I watched this Raw, and I fast-forwarded pretty much everything. It really did, nothing really kind of got my attention. The Shield match, you know, we were talking a little bit before, Shield's the only thing that's really going on. But to me, that Shield match wasn't that good. It was okay, but it's kind of like, I'm glad that they're winning, but to me, what's the point? It's like they weren't dominant. You know, they did certain things and they won, but they weren't that force that they can be. And I just kind of I've seen a trend with the Shield over the past couple of weeks where they're kind of starting to be the straight heel team that can't go up against these big guys as a team.
So you think they're more like clearly defined in the heel role right now? Because I got to thinking that they're really tweeners the way that they're getting pop everywhere they go and people follow them. So, you know, generally, as we've said, like, McMahon doesn't really like the tweeners so much, right? He likes the roles clearly defined, and I think initial plan
is that just like an old man thing now, or what? I mean, because he built his company off of tweeners. But when he got huge, when he was being WCW, it was because of the tweeners. Is that just like a backlash from him, you know, with the whole Vince Russo regime? And
I'm going way off where I started going with this, but I was thinking about this today, too, and like, you know, I think it's weird how, you know, people always, like, our age want to go back to, like, what was the Attitude Era?
I don't want to go back to the Attitude Era.
No, just what was it? And, you know, and I think, like, for me, like, I kind of look at it a little bit differently, because I don't look at the Attitude Era as strictly a WWE thing, right? I look at it as that was that 5 or so year period of wrestling that WWE and WCW were going head-to-head. And I think WCW was every bit as much a part of the Attitude Era as WWE was. But I think the main thing that made the Attitude Era what it was competition. And you've gotten so far out from how the time it's been that WWE had any competition. Like, WCW really made him work back at that time. And you couldn't have a guy like, you know, obviously WCW went the Goldberg route back then. But WWE couldn't afford to go the Goldberg route back then, because they knew if they tried to push someone that was, that they were just pushing that had no ability, that someone in WCW would make them look bad. But WWE's so far gone from having any real competition anywhere.
And what was the end result of the whole Goldberg thing? I mean, it's funny that you bring that up.
They're doing that
right now.
Right, but they can do it because they don't have any competition. At least WCW, I mean, it was bad. But, I mean, at least I could see a situation where they thought, hey, we really don't have much left right now. You know, this may be the last card we have, and see what we can get out of it. I mean, I don't agree with that.
I'm going to disagree with that whole thing.
I don't agree with that, but I'm just saying I can see.
I think they're just buying their time, saying, like, let's build this guy up, and then Hulk Hogan's sitting there going, like, well, then I can beat him. Yeah.
Right, but even still, like, they're probably looking at it, and it's like, well, nothing else we tried at this point is going to get us over. Let's just go with this, right? I mean, I think that was a bad strategy, but I kind of think that's what they did. So, but at least they were there to push the WWE at the time. Now that there's no more competition in wrestling, like, the WWE can rehash stories every 2 years and go with bad gimmicks and guys like Santino getting 30 minutes of FaceTime every week. It's like,
no, he hasn't been game theory.
Not now, but yeah. I mean, how long did they? They went years of getting that from him, right? And it's like, but what do they have to worry about? TNA? TNA is not, you know, making any headway. They got some nice wrestling for like real wrestling fans, but like, you know, they're not run well enough to have any kind of shot to overtake WWE or even like cut into their market.
Which is kind of funny because I haven't watched TNA. I haven't watched TNA since Samoa Joe and Christopher Daniels, and I guess that's pretty much it. But I'm talking about like from like 4 or 5 years back. Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny. I'm hearing this whole thing about Bubba Ray and how Bubba Ray is really starting to establish himself. But the whole thing is that I will not watch it because I know there's going to be a Hulk Hogan or Eric Bischoff to kill that when it's ready to be killed. Mm-hmm. And even bring in the whole Brooke Hogan angle or whatever it is, it's like I know somewhere down the line that any leeway, anything fresh that anybody does, and I haven't watched it, but
Hogan's going to come in and kill it?
Yeah, I mean, Bubba Ray, but if Bubba Ray is
Bully Ray, by the way.
Okay, I'm sorry, Bully Ray. If Bully Ray is the top heel in the business right now, and he's getting a ton of momentum and this stuff, that, and this, I haven't seen anything about it. I've seen enough of Bully Ray. I've seen enough of actually Bubba Ray to know that the guy knows the business, respects the business, does well by the business, and can do, you know, good work.
Right.
I don't think he ever had the time or the do. They tried to split the two, him and Devon, up, and it didn't work, so they repackaged them, and then like 3 months later they were gone.
Right.
Is anything anybody does or anything that's fresh, Hogan in some way is going to try to steal off of that and still keep it. So that's why I'm not watching anything with that right now.
That's been a lot of the internet rumor over the last month, was Hogan talking about coming back for another match.
See, and I haven't read any of the rumors. Right. I mean, I don't need rumors.
Yeah.
I like what you said about the Attitude Era. I think that was the first time, I think out of anybody that's ever talked about the Attitude Era on Twitter, online, I think, to tell you the truth, I think that's what you said is probably the most concise. And a lot of taking away all the revisionist history of the company that won, a lot of people do forget that WCW kind of started the whole thing, and WWE built up their reputation, and they won based off of performers, based off of people that should be in the number one and number two spot. And it's very easy for anybody to say, it's very easy for Vince McMahon to say, Stone Cold and The Rock saved my company. Well, why were they able to do that? Because they were given a chance. Mm-hmm. And the people, as much as I hate to say, we're the ones that spoke about it. I mean, we went crazy for The Rock. And I remember the day where I'm sitting there, and I was a big WCW guy before you were, and because of the whole Ric Flair and Four Horsemen stuff and everything like that. And then I started watching, and WWE was kind of like, was a redheaded stepchild. It just didn't have the star power. All these major guys were in WCW.
All right.
I remember the day where I'm sitting there watching Stone Cold Steve Austin, and it might have been against Rock, and I talked about this before. It might have been against Rock. It didn't matter who it was, but I'm sitting there watching this match, and these guys are going all out. I mean,
it was probably Bret Hart. Wait, go ahead.
It wasn't the Bret Hart match. No, it wasn't that one. That match is fine. I don't want to get into that, but yeah. it was on free TV.
I was trying to bait you. Go ahead.
Yeah, don't bait me, because you've heard it before.
Yes.
It's a very old argument, but it was on free TV, and I'm sitting there going, this guy is going all out. I mean, he did a Luthez pin, and then he started doing the punch, and I'm just sitting there going, like, and I saw it, like, many times before, but I saw him actually doing it. It was the first time I appreciated it. I was like, both these guys are going all out, and both these guys are kicking ass, mm-hmm. and they don't have that in WCW. And the sad thing is about what's going on with WWE right now is that they have performers that can do that. Daniel Bryan's one of them. Randy Orton isn't. Cody Rhodes is one of them. Randy Orton isn't. But these are the guys that are getting pushed. These are the guys that keep on winning. Dolph Ziggler is still losing every week, even though he's a champion. Mm-hmm. And for the first time in a long time, I think over the past 2 days, I'm sitting there going, you know, I don't have to watch this anymore, because without CM Punk being around, and you brought this up when we kind of talked on this weekend, is that everybody's starting to realize how important CM Punk is to that company.
I think so, yeah.
And you even brought up the point, well, I'll let you bring it up, but go ahead.
Yeah, just, I mean, the show's not the same without him. He's way more interesting than anybody they have. He's better in the ring, the best speaker they have. And just doesn't feel as big without him on all the shows. So I think that WWE is probably figuring out that too. That, I mean, like, one of the things, you know, it's like a separate issue, but as just being like, now that Ryback's, I guess, allegedly the top heel since Punk's out, he gets no kind of reaction. I mean, CM Punk, he either, I mean, in the same building, he gets, it's what's great about the universe, John.
Here we go.
He gets cheered.
Easy, John.
And he
easy.
Gets food.
Easy, John.
No, but he gets, but the boos that he gets are like passionate boos. People really hate that guy, like the ones that don't like him. Ryback has no reaction. Like, he's in the match, it's dead quiet. And it wasn't in that first Daniel Bryan match till he went for his finisher that he finally got a little bit of a boo.
But what were they booing about, though? They weren't booing him. What were they booing about?
Oh, I don't know. What were they booing about?
Well, I personally think they're booing because people are starting to realize that Daniel Bryan was carrying this whole match, and then at the end, Ryback's just going to turn around and finish it. I really think that's what they were booing about. I mean, we've seen it so many times before, and we've harkened back to the days when the first time we ever really recognized and realized it was when Macho Man fought Hulk Hogan for the championship in WrestleMania 5.
Yeah.
Or not, oh, 6, I'm sorry. And we're suddenly going like, this guy is having the match of his life. It was with WrestleMania 5. This guy is just completely dictating the match of how it's going to be,
yeah.
And then Hulk Hogan's going to just lay back. And Hulk Hogan he pretty much just laid there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he stood there and got punched. And Macho Man was moving everybody around the ring, doing all this stuff, and it's like, okay, it's Hulk Hogan's turn now. Let me do this, let me do that, leg drop, I win the title. And to me, that's what I think they're booing about. I don't think they're booing about because the big beast of Ryback, also known as Dave Bautista, the second coming of Dave Bautista, came in and won the match in the last 2 minutes. I think they're looking like, this guy doesn't deserve to win. And when you start having fan reaction like that, it's like, are you watching what you're putting on your product? Is this the product that you want?
It's apparently the Ryback now, somehow.
The Ryback rules?
The Ryback rules, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, you can't even go out and figure out a way to get booed. You know what I'm saying?
Well, take the whole thing, Ryback's heel turn, and you look at CM Punk's heel turn. CM Punk wasn't getting booed after his heel turn. And he was a little bit, but I mean, he put up... There's like a heel book 101, the book of the book of heels 101,
yeah.
And he did every episode from Raw was chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, and me and you have seen it so many times, but he was doing it and he was just paying off. And
well, you know what it was that really made it solidify for him was the King, probably the last like real contribution the King has had.
Yeah,
but yeah, like it was his fights against the King. Where anybody that was like on the fence, that wasn't already 100% with Punk, anyone that was on the fence, that those matches with the King solidified it.
After the King had his heart attack,
yeah.
Punk comes back out and ridicules him for his heart attack. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but like you said, he worked and he made it. He made it so you know he got the reaction he was supposed to get. Ryback just doesn't have the ability to do that.
Well, can I say something, one thing right now? Can we just stop cold turkey? Can I say something right now?
Yes.
Really? Okay. I'm just driving, I didn't like to do Ryback, and I did Ray Johnson. That's my colleague.
That's my colleague from
you like that? But one thing I do want to say is, no, really, seriously, Ken. I do not care about John Cena versus Ryback. I do not care about kayfabe Brock Lesnar breaking into WWE headquarters. I do not care about Brock Lesnar versus Triple H. I do not care about Ryback versus Cena. And these are the two matches that they're trying to push. And I could give a flipping fuck, Kevin. So that's the problem. The problem is too is that they're building up these two matches. So that's how I feel about it.
That's how you feel about that. Yeah, I mean, there's that, and then there's the Shield, and there's really no other storylines going aside from, of course, the Caitlyn secret admirer.
Yeah,
right.
But well, my favorite part of all of Raw was the 2 seconds where I saw Randy Orton lay on the ground, and you don't even know what's going on. Yeah, of course you know
yeah.
I was fast forwarding that part, of course, because I didn't want to see. Anything talk, but you know Michael Cole talk or whatever that the dude that was on Tough Enough and now he's an announcer Jake or whatever his name is, but it was nice to see Randy Orton on the ground for like you know 2 seconds or 10 seconds and the Big Show coming out, which was actually a pretty weak KO punch, but
yeah
I mean it was just kind of it you know, with Raw, it was more of the same. It's like, who is Sheamus going to fight? What guy have I not seen Sheamus? Oh, look, it's the Intercontinental Champion. Is he going to win? No, he's going to lose. So it's just, it was just more of the same over and over and over again. And we're just kind of sitting here in limbo. And it's just kind of, you're kind of counting the days until CM Punk comes back or what they're going to do, because they're not building anybody up. They're not making stars of any people. The people that they're trying to make stars out of, like a Kofi Kingston, he's not going to take off. And it seems like the guys that will take off or can take off, they're losing every flipping week.
Well, you said something that, you know, I thought was pretty interesting and pretty straightforward.
Was it when I said, was that?
Okay. And then I had to translate it for the people. And what that news Ramen over here was saying is that, like, he basically feels that any guy that's good enough to be better than John Cena, they're going to bury just so that he can't get to that potential. And all the guys that are getting pushed are the guys that have no chance to surpass John Cena. And so I thought that was pretty interesting. I was wondering if you could kind of like go in more into depth with that. I mean, like, the clear case was, like, you know, Ryback as being someone who has limited potential. So even if he reaches the highest that he can get, he's not gonna go over what John Cena does. And then to juxtapose that, you look at a guy like Dolph Ziggler, who, you know, if pushed the right way, could be the modern day Shawn Michaels. But instead of pushing him that way, they bury him. They keep him losing. Just so that, in your eyes, you were kind of saying, just so he can't supersede John Cena. So, I mean, I just was kind of curious how he came to that theory, because, I mean, it sounds kind of plausible, but I was just curious how he got there.
So now you're putting me on the spot.
No, I thought it was interesting, so.
I think I want to preface it by saying that I think what's going on right now is that they're really trying to sell this pay-per-view, the Elimination Chamber, which is kind of a sad thing because it's the first one after WrestleMania.
I think it's Extreme Rules.
Extreme Rules. Who cares? I mean, that's how much I care about this pay-per-view, because I do not care about Ryback versus John Cena. I don't care about Brock Lesnar versus Triple H. I think that's what they're trying to push. They don't have their old reliable in CM Punk. I don't know. There's no other explanation why they would be doing this. I don't know how, as a company, you can see a guy like Ziggler, and you can see the pop that this guy gets when he wins the title. Now, granted, it was a crazy crowd, but it's just, you know.
But even
but here's the whole thing: is like we do a podcast, right? And it's like it goes off really well, and we're really happy with it. So if it goes really well, and we're really happy with it, are we going to turn around and say, well, let's go back to the one that we first did that we didn't like too much? Let's go back to that one. Because everything that was great about this crowd or that was great about this show, let's not do that anymore. Let's go back to the old tried and true method of let's lay it out, John Cena promo, fast forward, good heels, good in-ring performers, losing, blah, 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 blah. Okay, and then let's lend it off to John Cena.
Non-title matches.
Non-title matches
where the
heels lose, but the champions win. So I just that's one thing I don't get, is that the only reason I can come to it is that you have a guy like Ziggler, you have so many guys that are good on the mic, are good in the ring, and they can build momentum. And that's just kind of the whole thing I don't understand, is that during the whole Attitude Era, and I'm not considering go like, oh, the Attitude Era was the greatest thing in the world, but the one thing that the Attitude Era did was that any guy that got steam or momentum and they started catching on with the crowd, those are the guys that they pushed. Mm-hmm. Because they had to, because of what you brought up. Yeah. Because of WCW, they had to do it. And now they don't have to do it, and you can make more money with a guy like Ziggler being the modern-day Shawn Michaels. You can make more money with a guy that has a great gimmick in Sandow and is good on the mic and can do all these things. You have one of the most impressive wrestlers. If you want to build this guy as the pound for pound the strongest wrestler around, and you're not going to push Antonio Cesaro, it doesn't make any sense. These guys they're just happy putting these guys in these spots, and that's what the fans want to see. I don't want to see it anymore because I'm fast forwarding it. So I don't. You ask me how I get to this point, I'm just getting to the point of going like, do you want to make money, more money with these guys? Or do you want to have the old tried and true method where you're complaining that your ratings are down, that buy rates are down? Well, who's the guy up on top? It's John Cena. And when you had, is it wasn't a case of CM Punk being the champion. These are why the buy rates are down. This is why the things were down. And you bring in The Rock, and gee, I wonder why people are going to look at The Rock, because he's in 15 movies this year. So, of course, your ratings are going to be up.
No, it's because of John Cena. People wanted to see John Cena.
Yeah. Yeah, and let's kayfabe everything we can do with John Cena with his leg and everything like that. So that's why I'm getting to it. I'm not gonna try to say that. I'm not going to be one of these people who say WWE sucks and this, that, and this, because, granted, when Monday comes around, I'm excited to watch it. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited, but it's kind of like a whole. It's kind of like when you're on a field trip, right? When you go to a field trip, and say you're in San Jose and you have to go to the Explorer. You go to the Exploratorium up in San Francisco, right? And you're excited. It's like, oh, it's Exploratorium. Now, back in the 80s, Exploratorium was like, that was like it, dude. It's like, hey, it's Exploratorium. They have all this cool stuff, right? Yeah. But you only had maybe an hour to go in there. You did most of your time driving through the traffic. And so you're really excited. And so the next time, you know, so we go there, and I'm ready to work on the little laser lights and all that stuff and put my reflection in this on all that. And then,
I
see the fat fuck bus driver going to the lady going like, well, we got to go. And I'm sitting going like, what the hell, dude? We just got here.
Yeah.
So the next time I went to the Exploratorium, I was like, man, I know about the Exploratorium. I'm like, man, fuck the Exploratorium, you know? So, but that's kind of the way I'm going into it with wrestling, is that I'm going to see that maybe I'm lucky enough to see Sandow have a microphone like he didn't have on SmackDown. And maybe I can watch him get his ass kicked in the end. And maybe he can have like a couple good spots here and there. So it's kind of like I'm excited, but I know what's going to happen, bad things that are going to happen.
You're excited for how good the show could be, because you know what it could be, but generally you end up disappointed in the end. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, it's not so much disappointed. It's more of, I'm not disappointed because I have seen it for the past 20, 25 years.
Yeah.
You're so used to it. Mm-hmm. You're so used to seeing the guys getting pushed that you don't want to get pushed. So I'm not going to come in here and start crying like, oh, this guy isn't getting pushed. It's like, I'm a wrestling fan.
Uh-huh.
I've seen it happen over and over and over and over again with guys that shouldn't be at the number one spot. But that's a necessary evil that you're going to do, because you're going to find hidden gems here and there. And for anybody to say that Randy Orton has the Garvin Stomp, that's not a Garvin Stomp. Listen, Ron Garvin sucked. Okay?
I was going to say, you're not going to start defending Ron Garvin over here.
If you're going to do the Garvin Stomp, do it as shitty as Ron Garvin did, okay? So, you know, but it's fine, dude. The one thing I do want to kind of bring up, because we can go over and over and over again, unless you have something to say. Do you have something to say about what we just talked about?
I'll get back to it.
You've done a good job.
Oh, thanks. Well, hey. I feel like I started a bunch of stuff that I didn't, you know, necessarily finish, because I was trying to stay on the topic.
Well, let's not explore that, because that's, yeah, you know, no, because the potential to that could be really good.
Yeah.
So let me just cut that. Let me
let's bring Laura Nitis back.
You like me, Kevin. one thing I'm looking at is this whole Chris Benoit Hall of Kayfabe. So what's going on?
Well, I thought you said that the name of that segment should be something like our Hall of Fame or something like that. So we're still on the yet to be named segment that could be the Hall of Kayfabe.
This is a good time to do it. We're about 33 minutes in. So
I hope that you
did I say Chris Benoit Hall of Kayfabe?
I did.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty good.
You like that?
I like it. Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad you feel like this is the right time too, because you're gonna carry the load on this one as well.
I'm gonna carry it, okay.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll lead you in though. I mean, this is kind of, now I think about the third week we've done this.
Fourth,
I think, actually, because the first one wasn't intentional, but it was Booker T, and then that kind of led me to Scott Hall.
You're doing your homework over here, dude. I'm impressed, man.
Scott Hall, my man May, and then today I wanted to go back to one of your guys. And that would be Chris Benoit. And I've been wanting to kind of do this for a while, because it's kind of a weird, it's a weird thing. Like, WWE is completely cut all ties with anything having to do with Chris Benoit. And I think in some ways, since we're so engrossed in WWE, since it's the only show in town, we kind of in some ways do that as well. But whenever we get to talking, you know, you always talk about, you know, how good Benoit was, and I mean, he was just a really talented performer, you know, obviously, all else aside, you know, no one, it was pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
But just since there's a whole generation of guys that, you know, they'll go back and they'll talk about like what Edge did before, eventually what Christian did before, what all these other greats did, Benoit's going to be a guy that, you know, he's never going to get a tribute DVD. He's never going to have anyone.
Well, he has one.
Well, not a WWE one.
Well, you know, he does. Well, when he first won the championship, mm-hmm. they had a kind of nice little. They had like his whole life story. Actually, I have it, and you know, I don't want to go and kind of, you know, when you hear someone on the radio, like a radio host, and they just really do like a really staid, like, oh, you know, this, you know,
like Colleen. Is that a Kali radio host?
No, that was just a... There's a lot of people that are on a platform like this that when they're really kind of asked to put everything, their heart on the line or their true feelings online, it's a lot of cliche. Mm. And it's kind of funny when... Well, it's not funny, but I think when Chris... Well, I know for a fact, when Chris Benoit died, that Monday they had a tribute show.
Right.
And so it was like one of the only few Monday nights I had off, because I used to work sports, so you have to work late at night while I was working features, and this was a lifetime ago. And I turn it on, I see this old Chris Benoit match, and I was like, well, this is like from the WCW days. Uh-huh. So I'm like, oh, hey, it's like, wow, they're showing Chris Benoit thing. But then I'm thinking, Chris Benoit died. And so I kind of go online real fast, and this is actually, it's funny how Twitter wasn't around back then.
That would have been a zoo, huh?
Yeah, well, that's kind of the whole thing, is that it's everything is social media has kind of pushed everything up to a high boiling point. So I kind of emailed my friend who was a big wrestling fan. He was he worked at the paper as well, and he was a Chris Benoit guy. And I was like, dude, I'm like, did Benoit die? He's like, yeah, I think he fucking did. You know, it's like he's like, and so I'm kind of looking. I was like, well, something's not. I mean, I kind of knew something isn't right about this guy dying. I mean, when you have a guy die that young, the first thing you're going to think of is steroids, and then everything starts kind of pouring in. And I was Chris Benoit was like my number one guy. You have Ric Flair, and right. Then to me, you have Chris Benoit,
yep.
And it's kind of like the whole thing. I've had experience with this before, because way back when the Warriors, you know, the Warriors are doing great things now. I don't want to talk about that double overtime thing, but I mean, Latrell Sprewell was like my number one. I was like his biggest fan. Dude. I mean,
Latrell Sprewell mark.
I marked out. If there's another worse term than Mark, that's what I was for Latrell Sprewell. So when the whole thing happened where he choked Carlissimo,
yeah, you were like, good. Carlissimo's a punk.
Carlissimo was a punk, but. But besides all that fact, so I kind of had where I was watching Sprewell when, you know, 1920, 21, when you could still kind of have heroes and stuff and you follow guys. And this was kind of like my first guy, like my first, like, it would be for like you, if like Ricky Henderson, you know, fell down to earth and did something totally bad. And this is a guy that you follow. This is a guy that you follow this whole time.
Yeah.
And everything is taken away like that. So I kind of had that with Latrell Sprewell and with Benoit. So I was kind of prepared for it. But when everything else happened, I don't think we don't talk about Chris Benoit because the WWE tells us not to. I legitimately don't want to talk about Chris Benoit. I don't think what he did. I mean, we both have kids, we both have wives, and for him to do that, it's like, you know, if you're going to kill someone, at least kill yourself and leave them out of it. So there's a big problem. There's a big part of me that has a problem with what.
So you have a hard time separating Benoit the wrestler from, like, you know, his final acts, I guess I'll say.
I don't have a problem with equating what his ring work was to what happened, because I'm not going to use his concussions and everything like that as an excuse. Uh-huh. Granted, that did lead to it, and I'll defend that, you know, to he's already dead, but I'll defend that the whole time, is that I believe that all the concussions that he suffered really lent to that. Uh-huh. It's hard for me. It's hard for me being a man and thinking, like, you take care of your family, that's number one. It's like, you always try to take care of your family, and that's the most important thing. And if things happen and people get divorced and stuff like that, then that's what happens. But even if you're divorced, whatever, you still try to take care of your family or take care of your kids. And to kill an innocent life that's 5 or 6 years old that doesn't even have a chance of living, that's very tough for me to talk about it. So that was a big preface. It should have been like maybe a 2-minute thing. I think Benoit was probably the best small wrestler I've ever seen. And I remember when Benoit came out, the first time I saw him, he was introduced as the Fourth Horseman. Fourth Horseman. So automatically, I like the guy. Mm-hmm. It's like because the Four Horsemen came back. It's when they had it was It was Anderson. It was Flair. It was Brian Pillman, who I thought was the perfect guy to put in there. I mean, he was like Tully 5.0. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tully. He was like the main heel of that guy, and Pillman just. He was like Tully on crack. Well, Tully has been on crack.
Tully was on crack.
But he's found God, so that's good. But so it was just a perfect dynamic. So you had Flair. Flair's going to be Flair. Arn's going to be the enforcer. Mm-hmm. You have the crazy wild card in Brian Pillman, who's really good in the ring, good on the mic.
Yeah.
And then you just have this straight, legit wrestler. And Arn Anderson filled that spot before, and Chris Benoit kind of filled that spot for Arn Anderson.
Right.
That guy was just, and I saw him one time. They're like, he just had a match by himself, and like, oh, here's Chris Benoit, the newest fourth horseman, and everything he was doing was just 150%. All the impact was as good as the impact as Ambrose's finisher. Same type of thing, just high impact, hard impact, hard impact, and I like small wrestlers that can do big things. And it's kind of the funny thing that also made me a big Chris Benoit fan was WCW versus NWO World Tour. Was that here was a small guy that could pull off a power bomb and he had power moves.
Yeah.
But he was a small guy and can still fly in the air. So I think that's really what I liked about the guy was that he was strong enough to pull off power bombs. He could pull off power bombs against bigger guys. Now, granted, he couldn't do it against the giants of everything of with the way WCW was with Nash, giant, you know. Every Hall, all these big guys, but he could do it against mid-sized guys. He could do it against a Booker T, but at the same time, he could still fly. But his flying wasn't weak. It wasn't like this all like it wasn't the Sin Cara stuff. It was hard hitting stuff.
Yeah,
headbutt off the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why I like the guy, and it was kind of the whole thing is that this guy was getting beaten down. And he was always held back, and then he had that one shining moment, which I think is probably one of the best WrestleMania matches I've ever seen. Was Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and Chris Benoit. It was actually the year that my daughter was born. It was the year that Outkast won CD of the Year and the Patriots won at the same time. So that whole year, everybody wants to succeed.
That was the year of bad news?
That was the year of bad news, yeah. Good news for bad news.
Good news for bad news.
You're going to go over here. I'm going to go over there. Brett, come here. Brett. Come here, Brett.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, like, yeah, he was just a great, like, technician, but had the power. You know, obviously his guy was a Dynamite Kid, but, you know, he still had a lot of that heart influence as well. And all those guys could really wrestle. And it was kind of like the next step, like, in athleticism. Like, you know, I'd say he's a lot more athletic than Bret Hart, but he had a lot of that same just basic technique. And that's one of the things I think that allowed him to have those power moves is because even though, you know, ultimately he got really roided up and got huge, I mean, he had all that flexibility and like, knew how to use the leverage and stuff to get those guys up. So, I mean, I thought that was just a great crop of guys, that last kind of group that followed through the dungeon of really big-time stars, like your Bret Hart, like your Chris Jericho and those guys. And, you know, I like Jericho. You know, I was always more of a Jericho guy than a Benoit, and a lot of it because, you know, he was a better talker than Benoit was. But in the ring, I mean, they're every bit the equal. I mean, you could say Benoit was the better performer. You know, I'm not going to argue that, you know, in the ring. And, yeah, it was great to see him finally get his run as a champion and see him not only in WCW. I was glad he got it in WCW because he had done so much. But then to see that WWE thought enough of him to put him on the top two, I mean, I thought that spoke volumes for what he was.
Well, I always look back at this is my guy, right?
No, yeah, I know. Just say, like, some of the best matches, like, obviously in WCW, and we talked about this when we talked about Booker. But
well, you're still my thunder now, all of a sudden.
Oh,
well, I was just going to bring that
okay,
up.
Okay, well, I won't go off on that. I'll talk about WWE. I really enjoyed the matches he had with Kurt Angle.
I thought
those were some of the best matches, and that was one of those where it was like, I think they probably had that match, like, 2 months straight, twice a week.
Yeah.
And I didn't miss any one of them.
Straight shoot wrestling.
Yeah, and it did. Yeah. And it did.
And your dad's in the bathroom going, he's no Gable. He's no damn Gable. I like how you bring up Chris Jericho, and I kind of want to bring that up real fast, is that Chris Jericho came in before Benoit did, and Jericho in his book really kind of said that he really had to learn how to wrestle the WWE style, because WCW was all look at me and try to steal a spotlight here and there. And Benoit definitely stole a spotlight. Benoit, Guerrero, Malenko, mm-hmm. really was the, and even Jericho.
Saturn,
they were the backbone of that show, that three-hour show.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that put on all the matches, and they jobbed a lot. And but at least you knew why they were jobbing, because, you know, they're facing these big guys and stuff and all that garbage. But Benoit had, it's very easy for us to say, like, he had the best of seven versus Booker T, which is, I think was epic. And that really set the bar. That's kind of like the ladder match of all ladder matches, mm-hmm. you know. The best of seven. Anytime you do a best of seven, it's going to go back to what Benoit and Booker T did. And then that's a big thing, because whenever you think of ladder match, the first ladder match you're going to think of, well, actually, that's not true. It's kind of a double phase. You have Shawn Michaels versus Scott Hall, but then you have Edge and Christian versus the Hardy boys. Yeah. So, but that's what you always kind of go to. But what a lot of people forget was that his matches with DDP were they're really good.
Yeah.
It's the best DDP ever looked, and DDP never hardly ever looked good. And it was kind of one of the things where you're kind of going like, ah, it's like, because that Diamond Cutter can come out of nowhere, and it's kind of funny we're bringing up the Diamond Cutter with the RK.
About Randy
Orton. Yeah, but it came out of nowhere. But Benoit knew how to tell a story where when it came off, you're like, okay, yeah, it works there, and Benoit made a mistake right there. And bringing up Chris Jericho was that he had a hard time adjusting. Well, right away when Benoit came in, he came in with the four guys, Guerrero, Saturn, Malenko, and him. Mm-hmm. And not only did WWE look at those four guys and go, well, Benoit's the star, mm-hmm. but everybody else looking saying, like, well, Benoit's the guy.
Yeah.
Benoit is the guy. And he adjusted to the WWE style so fast that within 2-3 months, he was having a program with the Rock.
Yeah.
And the best thing about it was that the Rock, everybody knew the Rock was going to win, but they put on such good, you know, you knew that Benoit having a match with The Rock, you were going to see Benoit at his best. And you knew you were going to see The Rock at his best.
Well, the other thing that was good about that time as well was if they had a program between Rock and Benoit, you can see The Rock beat them 6 matches in a row. Benoit would win a couple of matches, right? So there was still some intrigue, right? Like, you know, now I've seen Sheamus beat Wade Barrett like 9 times out of 10 times they fought. There's no intrigue, but you could legitimately say, okay, you're going to see Benoit and you're going to see The Rock, and, you know, it could be a swerve, but you didn't know who was necessarily going to win on a given night. You'd have to kind of read it going into the pay-per-views, who lost the last match, who had the momentum and whatnot. But they gave, like, each guy put the other guy over, right, by legitimately losing matches. And I think that's another thing that was missed back then. Like, I don't see the reason why. You know, I can understand if you need Wade Barrett to job, then you need him to job sometimes. Just Wade Barrett as an example. But I don't need to see him lose 8 matches in a row. He can beat guys sometimes, right? And that's one other thing I think we're missing, too. But I guess that's beside the Benoit.
Well, we're talking about Benoit here, right?
Yeah, so, sorry.
That's fine, dude. A couple things with Benoit. A lot of people forget. So I'm just going to say it. Cripple crossface. To me, one of the best submission moves of all time. Diving headbutt off the top rope. Rolling German suplexes. I think the 10 that he did on Triple H that one time.
Yeah.
You remember that stuff.
Yeah.
Had great chops. Some of the best chops in the game.
Yep. After Flair.
I would, you know, in terms of devastation, I would put Chris Benoit's chops over. Actually, if I'm going to go chops, like top all time, it's kind of funny that we're doing this. Number one.
Ricky
Steamboat had the best chops ever. Number two would probably be Chris Benoit.
Yeah.
Number three is Flair. Now Flair's the originator, so you can that's really good company. But going down the line, those chops, that's the way these guys have chops.
No Muda up in that top three.
No, Muda
average chop.
Muda. Listen, Muda did a ton of other things that.
Hey. Ming.
Ming. There, you know, we did that last.
Oh,
we did that
sorry,
2 weeks
sorry,
ago.
Sorry.
We did that 2 weeks ago.
I got one word. Shame. Yeah. I'm not necessarily saying that Benoit was better. I was just saying after Flair kind of ceded the mantle of best chop guy, it went straight to Benoit. And it was no question.
Yeah.
There was no question that anybody else should have it.
No, the guy was hard hitting, and it was. it was kind of we have to bring up the whole thing of what happened when he died, and I think kind of I think Jericho says it best, and it's kind of funny. Jericho, I think in his first book, he has a bunch of pictures of kind of his career, and in one of them he has a picture of woman and Chris Benoit, and he goes, you know, I had a hard time putting this picture in. He's all, but that day they loved each other. And to kind of forget all of that and just remember the negative, who are we to kind of do that? And he's kind of said it in a different way, but he was there. And I don't know what you're going to say or what you want to say, but you can't take away what he did for the business. You can't take away the performer that he was. I mean, he was every, maybe not so in WCW, but before all the way up till he died in WWE, he was kind of coming in the role of the Undertaker. He was kind of the guy that had the backstage politics and stuff. He was the model worker in that company. And it's a shame that it, as true to his nature, hard hitting, no nonsense. Well, at the time, maybe when he needed help, well, he was so involved in the business, he was such a hard hitting guy that, and you couldn't chink his armor, that maybe that led to his downfall. Mm-hmm. And it's a bad thing. It's a bad thing for him, but more so it's a bad thing for what happened with his family. And he still has a son that's still alive. He still has all these people that love him. And this is the way that the guy's going to be seen for the rest of his life. And it's not right.
Yeah. I'll just say a couple things, piggyback off a couple things you said. One, like you mentioned, his finishers, like the diving headbutt and the crippled crossface. I thought one of the great things was His limitation was his size, right? And those two finishers that he had made it so he could win any match against any guy of any size, and it was still good. It wasn't a Rey Mysterio situation where someone's doing backflips to make him look good, right? I mean, he could pull those moves off. They looked like they hurt for real, and he could get it on anybody. The other thing was just that you mentioned earlier how they're trying to push Cesaro as the toughest guy pound for pound. I mean, Benoit was the toughest guy pound for pound, and you give that guy 3 more inches and 20 more pounds, and he may have been the greatest that there ever was, you know what I mean? So, like, with the ability that he had, the only thing that held him back was the fact that he was about 5'10". But, great performer, and again, I mean, you know, we're not going to condone anything about how things went, but, you know, he was a really good contributor for a long time in terms of just straight wrestling. Depending on how you feel about it, you know, if you've never seen the guy perform, I mean, he's a great performer. So depending on how you feel, you might want to see some matches just see what he could do, because it was pretty amazing.
Well, and let me finish this since this is my guy.
Yes.
But the thing that you said, the thing about him being 3 inches taller or 4 inches taller and 40-50 pounds heavier,
20.
Well, yeah, that's the first time that I've ever thought about that. And you're right. But the greatness of Chris Benoit was that I never thought that, because to me, everything that I wanted in a wrestler, that's what he was. And it's kind of funny you say, you're absolutely right. If he was this, he was that, he could have been the best ever. Well, he was pretty damn fucking close. even at his size. I never thought about it. When he went there, you never thought of his size. I never saw him as a small guy. Now,
yeah.
Of course, Kevin Nash called him like the vanilla midget,
the vanilla midget
and stuff like that. But I think that really kind of attests to the greatness of him in the ring, granted everything else that's going on, was that I never thought of his size. I never thought of it that way. And you're absolutely right. But you know what? That doesn't make him any better than I already think the way that he was in the ring. So, Hall of Kayfabe, I like it. That's what we're going to call it from now on, Hall of Kayfabe. We're getting up on the hour, and let's kind of finish it on this. We're not going to finish it on this. Let's finish it on this. There's a guy on Twitter. I think it was maybe Not So Smart Smarks or whatever, and they were talking about the best wrestling shows or the best wrestling WWE wrestling show. And they were saying that SmackDown was it hands down. And you kind of had other people saying, well, if you had to replay this, that, and this, the replays make it bad because you're watching a commercial for Raw. And someone brought up, you know, they're like, well, what about Main Event? Main Event had a really good match with Kofi and Cesaro. And I think I brought up, it's like, yeah, it's like, that's fine. I said, but those stupid promos they do with The Miz, where he's just like overselling everything and pointing the ion sign and doing all this stuff with his hands and stuff. Like, that's just a bad 10 years. And then, but there's one guy that came out and actually said, and this is going to kind of lead into what you just said before we do this podcast, was that he was saying that NXT is the best wrestling program. And I have so much respect for NXT is that I already think it's the best wrestling program, but I've never watched it. Yeah. So to me, NXT really just kind of with the buzz and kind of what knowing the people that are involved and knowing the people that are actually involved with the whole running of the show, it reminds me a lot of Saturday night for WCW. Where you just had, the mothership. Yeah, it's just good old fashioned wrestling, and kind of developing storylines and slow, but good matches in between. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's what NXT is going to be. And you're the one that has this news, and I'm just saying if it's true, that's the first thing I want to watch.
Yeah. Okay, well, I guess you didn't even tease what the news is, so yeah, there's a
little I'm letting you do it.
Yeah, no, I see.
Because you did all the legwork. Yeah,
but word on the street is that WWE with...
Well, first of all, no more word on the street, okay?
It was on JR's Twitter amongst Pro Wrestling Torch and Pro Wrestling Mania. We're saying that maybe within the next year, WWE is going to try to bring NXT to United States television. I guess it's already on TV in Europe, and they're trying to solidify it in the U.S., but maybe within a year that might happen. I mean, I think that would be great. all the guys that they've been bringing up from NXT are good. I mean, I think the worst guy I've seen from NXT in the last 2 years is Fandango, and that's only because I still haven't seen whether he's any good or not. I can't make that determination, not saying he's bad, but, like, there's a lot of guys that I've been dying to watch that I know are down there. Richie Steamboat for one, Cassius Ohno, the former Chris Hero, is another. So I think that, you know, it's probably a show. I gotta imagine it's a show with a lot of young, hungry guys that, and there's no John Cena, like, glass ceiling guy that's there to hold everybody down. Everybody's trying to come up, and I think they're probably being given the opportunity to do that. The cream's kind of rising to the top. I'm just curious to see how good these guys are.
I think the main thing, one thing that you did bring up earlier before, and you just brought up right now, is that there's competition. There's a healthy competition amongst the performers. And it's an old school type of wrestling. I mean, one thing that always drew me to WCW in the 80s was that you had all these guys that were trying to make a name for themselves. Now you had... It's funny, you talk about John Cena as a glass ceiling, and we always try to find ways like, well, why does John Cena suck? Or what can we say to make people realize that John Cena isn't what he is? Mm-hmm. How do we cleanse the unwashed masses? your top guy was Ric Flair, and he would job for the person that deserved to be jobbed for.
Right.
He would pass the torch, and the torch would be passed to him, but he'd always try to make a bigger star out of someone else. And that's I think, kind of the reason why I have a problem with the Bret Hart. Why I have a problem with John Cena. But it's that the whole thing about WCW Saturday Night was that he had a bunch of young guys, even established guys. There's established guys there too within NXT, and they're all hungry, and they all want to do stuff. And that's, you look at the Raw roster, I don't think anybody is hungry on the Raw roster. The only guy that's hungry on the Raw roster right now, he's not there anymore, and that's CM Punk. So...
I think Dolph's hungry, man.
Okay, we'll give you Dolph. You know, so they're making a blatant mistake with Dolph by not pushing the guy the way he needs to be pushed. You're right. The names that kind of what NXT has done is that they're taking like the indie fan and they're playing to the indie fan. They're bringing up all these young guys, not indie stars directly, but they're bringing these young guys that they don't know about. But you do have Chris Hero. You do have all these guys that you do have CM Punk at the time.
The other guys too, like guys we were kind of they were really wrong when we saw them. I think both of us really like our Mike McGillicuddy and Husky Harris.
There we go.
Which is no longer his name, Bray Wyatt. And there's even been internet talk of him coming up to the big roster soon. But I thought those guys were a really good tag team and had them being billed the right way, I thought they could have... I mean, they easily could have been a dominant run considering the state of the tag team division at that time. So I'm curious, you know, seeing how all the other guys have come through the system and look really good, I'm curious, like, how much better those guys have gotten being able to work on their craft somewhere like that. You know, with trainers like, you know, Dusty Rhodes is there all the time. You know, JR is always going in. They have a lot of, you know, used to be Hugh Morris, but now it's Kip Sopp that's running the training. So I'm curious to see, like, you know, what are these guys picking up from them and how good can they really be? Because I thought they had a lot of potential 3 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I always bring up Husky Harris, and I thought the stuff that he was doing, you kind of look at what Tensai is doing now. Well, Husky Harris was doing that with the Senton Bomb and stuff. He's just doing really good work. And the guy that I think draws most of my interest now, well, the two guys that, you know, that draw my, well, I'm not going to stop there. The three guys that I like the most right now, okay, are Cesaro, okay, NXT, Damian Sandow, he was known as something else in NXT, but right there, and then Big E Langston. So all these guys came from, and when Big E came up, I was like, well, why are they bringing this guy up? Yeah, you have all these other guys that can do it, but lo and behold, this guy delivers the goods. And for right now, I probably would have liked it, you know, if you had Husky Harris, McGillicuddy, and Big E Langston. Big E Langston would have been the last guy that I would have picked. But the way they've been using him, the way he's on Twitter, he had something with Caitlyn going back and forth on Twitter the other night, and just what he does in the ring, it's like, yeah, this guy's a star, and this is a guy that I like. So,
I mean, you're mentioning those guys. You need to mention the Shield, you know, all three of those guys.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. You have Ambrose, and then you have El Generico in there too. So yeah. If NXT,
you're talking about Sami Zayn, right?
Is that what his name is?
Yeah,
Sami Zayn instead of El Generico.
Yes.
So it's funny that you bring this up, then being on TV, because I'm sitting there going, after Raw ended on Monday, I think this is how we can end our podcast. But when Raw ended this Monday, I was like, you know what? I'm like, maybe it's time I start buying Hulu Plus, whatever like that, so I can watch NXT, because I need to watch something. Because this isn't doing it for me anymore. And it's not going to do it until CM Punk comes back or until something changes within the ranks of all the guys that I like. It's like, and it's funny that we bring up Chris Benoit, because I watched 8 years of Chris Benoit losing, and I didn't start watching until he started winning. And I really didn't get into wrestling until CM, I mean, it's funny, we started talking about it, and you're like, hey, let's do this podcast, and The Rock brought me back to start watching it. But the Nexus had their little run. I was like, oh, this is pretty good. I like where it's going. But then the guy that came out of that was CM Punk. And CM Punk took everything off, and that's why I started watching it again. Yeah. So, it's funny. I'm going to keep on watching Raw. But if I keep on getting Raws like this, and I do not want to watch John Cena versus Ryback, Brock Lesnar versus Triple H, I think I'm really going to start looking. I think maybe we should start our fund. Me and you kind of pull them together so we can both purchase NXT and watch on Hulu Plus.
Maybe we could take Twitter donations.
I try to do it on our website, mudascale.podbean.com.
Yeah.
To
right here. Right here. In Northern California.
I have a PayPal set up so Bad News can buy a Damian Sandow shirt. I still haven't got anything yet, but last thing real fast, not too fast, but Ambrose finisher, you like it?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
It's unique. I thought it was kind of cool because I hadn't really thought about it, but he's like the one guy in the Shield I haven't seen a finisher from. You know, you know Rollins does that knee to the temple, which looks really good. Reigns has the spear. Any cover that Ambrose got, I think he's gotten off of a Reigns spear. So I was kind of wondering because, you know, when I go to create these guys I go to create these guys on the game, so I start looking at, say, like Wikipedia or different things, and he had like three or four different finishers listed, and it's all like in the Mike Tenayese.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to picture in my mind, the hell was that? What are they trying to describe?
And then you click it on Wikipedia, and then they have like list of all these holes.
It was a body slam.
What is that? What is that move?
Yeah. So like, I didn't know if he was going to come with something that he had used before, or if he was going to come with something new. But it's a good variation of an EDT.
Even that, but I'm trying to like think of it too. It's kind of like a inverted diamond cutter a little bit too, right?
Yeah. It's almost like it's like a little bit of a top rope,
yes,
punch, DDT bulldog,
half a punch.
Yeah, it's like a DDT bulldog hybrid. Is kind of what it is.
Well, he did
anyway. It was effective. As Brutus down.
So, well, he did have the DDT against The Undertaker, and I was like, that's okay. But then he rolled that other one out against Kane. One thing I do want to say, and I don't want to get into this too much, but, man, Ambrose can bump, dude. That guy, to me, if I have to say the best bumper in the game, just the little seat that I've seen from him, that guy can take bumps like crazy. And that's, to me, that's his calling card. And if he can keep on doing those bumps, that guy has a huge future in him. You watch those matches again that he did against Kane, that he did against The Undertaker, and I always say, it's like, do you make the guy look good, and can you look good at the same time? And Ambrose has it. And Rollins is really good in the ring. Reigns is excellent in the ring. And we've always kind of said, me and you have always kind of said that, well, we think Ambrose is a star. Now, I think Ambrose is the star, but I think Rollins can be one too. I think Reigns can be one as well. But that guy just taking all those bumps, and that guy proved a lot to me. So yeah. That's all I got to say. Let's finish it off, and
let's
do what we always do.
All right, yeah. I mean, I think the Shield is pretty much where it's at right now in wrestling. The most interesting, the best thing going today.
Okay. I thought you were going to go in the whole John Cena thing. Like, you can either cheer him.
No.
you're going more of like, what's causing all this? All right, so better have my donuts over here. I'm Bad News Ramen. You can follow us on Twitter. And just keep it rolling. And I feel like dropping a Tribe Called Quest beat over here or something like that. Dun, dun, dun. You have nothing, huh?
Yeah, no.
Drawing a blank over here, huh?
You lost me.
Okay.
Wasn't We Got the Jazz, wasn't
it? No. Keep it rolling. I even said it. Keep it rolling.
That's the leaders of the new school.
No.
And Tribe Called Quest.
Keep it moving. No, yes. Keep It Rolling is the one that they had the large professor.
XGP.
Am I right?
I don't remember it. Oh. You were more of the main source guy than I was.
Yeah.
So I will defer to you.
I don't want to bring up the whole Latrell Sprewell thing again and everything like that. So,
hey, how was main source doing that year?
Fuck them two DJs. All right. So bet on my donuts over here, Bad News Ramen. Thanks for checking us out. We'll be back next week for Moodle Scale 27.
And it's a good number.
Good to go around the and DJ
Go
Cool.
Hotel.
So I said
yeah,
there you go. All right, we're out.